You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Hello, you're listening to Opus Talks Renewable Fuels. I'm Jordan Godwin, Director of Renewable Fuels Pricing and News here at Opus, a Dow Jones company. With me today is longtime refining and biofuels industry consultant Andy Lipow, President of Lipow Oil Associates. Andy will be speaking at our upcoming Opus RFS RINs and Biofuels Forum in Chicago on September 24th. He'll be talking about RINs markets and giving his annual crystal ball predictions. In today's episode, you'll learn what to expect from the biofuels market in the coming months. So before we get started, I just wanted to kind of give a bit of background on the RFS for those who are a little unfamiliar. Let's start off with the RFS. So that's the Renewable Fuel Standard, which is a federal mandate that requires refiners and importers of gasoline and diesel to blend certain amounts of biofuels into our transportation fuel supply. Under the program, which is overseen by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, obligated parties use RINs, or Renewable Identification Number credits, to prove compliance. And those credits are heavily traded in a market that Opus follows very closely. We're the benchmark pricing authority for RINs, with futures contracts on the Intercontinental Exchange and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So RINs are kind of our bread and butter. Andy, from your point of view, what's the RIN balance looking like at the moment? How are things looking in RINs?
Well, when we think about RINs, I'd first like to say they're the currency by which one may meet their obligation. And when we look at the RIN bank, we have to consider what is the supply of RINs, which may be ethanol blending or renewable diesel and biodiesel blending, as well as cellulosic RIN generation. And on the demand side, of course, we've got the compliance deficit carryover from the previous year, as well as the total RINs that are required for compliance, which also includes those D4 RINs needed for D6 compliance. When we look, where is the balance currently at? At the end of 2022, we found that the RIN bank was actually at a negative 1 billion gallons, but the compliance deficit carryover of 1.3 billion gallons enabled the RIN market to function. At the end of 2022, we saw the D6 RIN bank going insolvent. The D4, D6 spread narrowed to near parity, and that's going to remain the case as we go through 2025. I think people were actually surprised when we looked at what the RIN bank balance was in 2023. It still was about a negative 1 billion gallons. And in fact, the 2023 RIN bank built less than 100 million gallons. But once again, in 2023, the compliance deficit carryover to 2024 of over 2 billion gallons provided the liquidity for the market to function.
That's very interesting. So basically, there are a lot less RINs on hand currently than we expected. Is this what it sounds like? What does that look like for the RINs balance in 2024?
Well, I think that the market forgot the fact that the number of RINs required for compliance depends on the obligated parties and the volume of fuel that they are reporting. And in 2023 and 2024, in fact, for 5 years running, the obligated parties are reporting more fuel than the EPA. In 2023, that amounted to 5.7 billion gallons worth of fuel. And in 2024, I estimate that would increase to about 6.5 billion gallons. That means that the RINs required for compliance increased by more than one might have expected in 2023 of about 700 million gallons, and in 2024 by about 800 million gallons. So when you see those headline RFS RVOs, they're actually going to be understating the amount of RINs required for compliance both this year and in 2025.
Very interesting. And what about the cellulosic biofuel RINs? I know you've talked a lot about, you know, what it means for the ethanol and the biomass-based diesel D6 and D4 RINs, how EPA categorizes them. But what about those D3 cellulosic biofuel RINs? What's their picture looking like at the moment?
Well, by my calculation, the cellulosic RIN bank went insolvent at the end of 2023. But once again, the compliance deficit carryover of 88 million gallons provided liquidity for it to function. Now, of course, I expect there's going to be all sorts of litigation between industry groups and the EPA regarding the granting of a cellulosic waiver credit for both 2023 and 2024. In fact, the D3, D5 spread today is greater than my estimated value of what the cellulosic waiver credit will be for compliance year 23 and compliance year 24.
Oh, wow. Do you have that number handy? Your calculation, can you share that? Or
I do have that number, and we'll talk about it at the Opus conference in September.
Oh, there's a very nice sneak peek for those who are already planning on attending, or those who are maybe considering attending. You can get the full scope of Andy's work in this space. And shifting gears a little bit, Andy, can we talk a little bit about renewable diesel? What's been going on with respect to the capacity of renewable diesel so far this year? And what do you think about it moving forward?
Well, we've added a significant amount of capacity in 2024 between Marathon and Martinez, Phillips 66 and Rodeo, Brea Renewables up in Newfoundland, as well as Chevron in Geismar, Louisiana, and Global Clean Energy Holdings in Bakersfield, California. Now, all of these are now assumed to be online or in the process of starting up. But one thing I would point out is they're all later than expected, and generally it takes them many months to reach full capacity, and they all end up experiencing some catalyst changeout downtime in the months following startup. In total, we added about 1.8 billion gallons of capacity by the end of this year, but I see very little additional RD capacity additions in 2025. In fact, if you're not already ordered your major pieces of equipment and under construction, I think many of the announced facilities projects are simply not going to happen.
That's very interesting. And what do you think is the main driver of that? Have we seen softer margins in that space? Is that kind of the main reason?
Well, not only has construction cost inflation been a headwind, so have renewable diesel margins, and they've remained under pressure. In fact, Phillips 66, at their second quarter earnings call, said that they lost $55 million on their renewables business in the second quarter and an equal amount in the first quarter. When we think about the whole renewable diesel and biodiesel business these days, as I mentioned earlier, we saw the D4, D6 spread narrow at the end of 2022. According to the EIA, in May, soybean oil represented 37% of the biomass-based diesel feedstock. And what that means is that the BOHO spread and RINs are currently tied together. If we were to look back on July of 2023, the BOHO was $2.64, RINs were $1.55, and the LCFS credit was $75. Today, the BOHO spread is roughly 70 cents, RINs have fallen to 55 cents, and LCFS prices have dropped to about $50 per ton. But that's not the entire story. Those are contributors to the economics. If one were to look at CARB diesel, it's trading at about 12 under the future screen. And renewable diesel is another 27 cent discount to CARB diesel. So renewable diesel margins are being squeezed on all fronts. And as a result, what we're going to see is a reduction in capacity, namely Vertex. We'll see a cut in runs, probably an increase in exports, a decrease in imports, and the proliferation of new markets, such as the European Union Emissions Trading System for marine fuels, which is increasing the demand for renewable diesel and biodiesel.
Wow, that's a lot of moving parts that, you know, that are really all seem to be pressuring renewable diesel margins. And a big component of that you mentioned is the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard, the LCFS credit component. What's the outlook for that? Is there any hope that those prices can recover in the near long term?
Well, hope always springs eternal is what they say. But the LCFS has been under pressure as the bank continues to increase to about 26 million credits after we got the recent CARB data. And these credits, of course, are being generated not only from renewable diesel, but from electric vehicles as well as RNG generation. So the market, I feel, is waiting on CARB for their November 8th meeting to see what are they going to do about their new greenhouse gas reduction targets. Are we going to get a step down from the current 13.25 carbon intensity? Will it be a seven number step down to 20.25, or will it be a 9% step down? And that, of course, will change people's perceptions of the future balance in the credit market. And of course, in order to incentivize the next tranche of RNG or hydrogen or whatever it is, we need to see an LCFS market of between 125 and 140 per metric ton. But under the current circumstances, there is no need to purchase credits today when the investment cycle says I don't need them until about 2030.
That's really interesting. And obviously the market has been waiting on the California Air Resources Board for quite some time now to, you know, inject some new clarity and certainty into the LCFS market with those new scenarios that you were talking about. Will obviously be something that we can discuss at our January LCFS and Carbon Markets Workshop in San Diego, which we hope to have you back there. Let's switch it up a little bit. And we're talking about renewable diesel. Another thing that's kind of on its tail is sustainable aviation fuel, as some producers of renewable diesel are starting to eye maybe stronger markets in that space, or stronger margins, excuse me. What's the outlook for SAF versus RD at the moment?
Well, I think the outlook is a little bit unclear, but once again, it's going to be driven by, you know, federal and state mandates and tax benefits such that we see in Washington State, Illinois, and Nebraska. But one of the biggest issues, or I think that is misunderstood between SAF and RD, is that you need a higher price for the SAF compared to renewable diesel because the co-product values, namely naphtha and LPG, are far lower than renewable diesel, and you get a lot more of those co-products when you're in a max SAF mode compared to a max renewable diesel mode. Not only do the producers have to contend with that, but of course, SAF only gets you 1.6 RINs versus 1.7 for every gallon of renewable diesel. Now, given that a number of plants are switching from RD to SAF, notably Diamond Green Diesel over in Port Arthur, I think that in conjunction with the European Union refuel requirements in 2025 requiring 2% SAF in fossil fuel jet fuel and departing flights from the EU, that is going to create a demand of 750 million gallons. But one of the kickers is that crop-based feedstocks producing SAF are not eligible. And unlike the U.S., where the incentives are driven by RINs or LCFS credits, it's driven by a penalty mechanism based on the difference between SAF and jet fuel. We could actually be in the position of exporting SAF off the Gulf Coast if it's coming from tallow or used cooking oil.
Definitely. And, you know, as you mentioned, a big component of that are those tax credits. Looking at the federal tax credits involved, the biomass-based diesel blenders tax credit that we've had for a few years versus the clean fuel credits, what's the difference in those credits? Just a high-level overview, and are there any proposals maybe in Congress to do something different in 2025?
So the BTC, the blender tax credit, is pretty simple. I call it carbon intensity agnostic. You get a dollar per gallon for every gallon that is blended with fossil fuel diesel here in the United States. And so the market knows it's a dollar. But the clean fuel production tax credit is carbon intensity dependent. And in fact, if you have a carbon intensity of 50, which is the threshold for an advanced biofuel, in fact, you get 0 cents per gallon. If your carbon intensity happens to be zero, then you will get a dollar per gallon, and that's for biodiesel and renewable diesel, a little bit different for SAF. One of the keys is, though, the imports of biodiesel or advanced biofuels are not eligible for this clean fuel production tax credit. And in 2023, we imported 950 million gallons on a physical basis, corresponding to about 1.5 billion RINs. So it's quite likely that you're going to see imports start to slow down. And another thing to recognize is this clean fuel production tax credit expires in December of 2027. So you can imagine we're going to see deja vu all over again, like we did with the blender tax credit. Every couple of years when it expired, the industry is going to be looking for some piece of legislation, namely a Tax Extenders Act, in order to renew the clean fuel production tax credit going forward. As far as proposals, of course, the industry has now recognized that they are going to get less money under the clean fuel credit compared to the BTC. So there's a number of proposals around the industry that have been floated in order to resolve this. One proposal that people talk about is, well, maybe we could extend the blender tax credit at the same time suspending the clean fuel production tax credit. Another possibility would be to have the domestic producer choose one. They could choose to use the BTC or the clean fuel credit, but not both. And then a third proposal is to make any foreign feedstock ineligible for the clean fuel production tax credit, which of course would benefit not only a domestic producer, but the domestic agriculture industry.
Fascinating. Yeah. So there's a lot of different options for producers, that's for sure. And as you mentioned, you know, that blender's tax credit has made its way back from the dead many, many times over in the past for those who've been watching this industry. And speaking of, you know, something that keeps coming back and doesn't seem to go away, small refinery exemption litigation around those waivers. We had another big court ruling in recent weeks involving those small refinery exemptions. What do you think will be the impact of that court ruling that vacated EPA's blanket denial of those exemptions?
Well, in the near term, there's actually no impact on the RIN bank, but it does open the door to increasing the probability that the EPA will grant some SREs. Now, it vacated the blanket denial of the SREs. The actual ruling has remained under seal, but I would point out it's remanded it back to the EPA. I think that the EPA probably lost because they gave a blanket denial but they will go back and now have to do it on an individual basis, which can take months or years. And the SREs still may not be granted. One thing that I would point out is if the EPA decides to grant some of these SREs, they could account for the exempt volume of gasoline and diesel prospectively for the 2026 to 2028 RVOs, like they did in the original 2020 final rule that was published back in February of 2020, where they included 7 billion gallons of gasoline and diesel to account for SREs that they thought they might grant.
Very interesting. And obviously, the next presidential administration will be overseeing the EPA when they go to look at these small refinery exemptions again. So definitely could see the election kind of playing a hand in this as well. Wanted to ask you, you know, we're having you back at our OPIS, RFS, RINs, and Biofuels Forum this year. I wanted to ask you to share maybe with other, with our listeners, what's been the best part of that event for you? You know, could you recommend it for others that maybe haven't attended before?
Well, one of the best parts is meeting other people in the industry and getting other viewpoints. And in addition, it's always good to get feedback when we're presenting data and balances on the RINs, which are very sparse in the public domain. So I would say that if you're interested in receiving a lot of data on what's happening on the RIN bank balance, which in we can draw analogies to the oil market. The oil market price depends on supply and demand factors, as well as government policies and geopolitical issues. And we have the same factors that, of course, are arising in the renewable fuels business as well. And you get to hear about all of those types of issues at the OPIS conference.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you've gotten some good networking out of it. And I know our attendees have always really appreciated your insights and thoughts in your presentation. I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, in more depth what you've been working on. So thanks so much again, Andy, for all of your insights. And thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thanks again for having me, Jordan. I appreciate it.
All right. I look forward to hearing you speak at the OPIS RFS RINs and Biofuels Forum in September. And listeners, hopefully we can see you there.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on OPIS Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more OPIS Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.